This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
This is the Power Hour, and we've got a great list of guests as we get you ready for a humongous day. Really in the history of ACC football, given the fact that two teams are in the college football playoff. Andrew Adelson will join us from the Sugar Bowl later on. But right now, the commissioner of the ACC, that'd be John Swofford, joins us. Commissioner Swofford, first of all, happy new year. I hope you're well. I hope you're safe and happy and healthy. And what an amazing day for the ACC. For a guy that was instrumental as a co-architect of the college football playoff, in your wildest dreams, you probably thought, well, it'd be kind of cool one of these days if the ACC could ever get two teams in the college football playoff. And lo and behold, here we are. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. It's great for our league. And, you know, we're going into a weekend today and tomorrow where we've got three teams playing in the Sugar, the Rose, and the Orange Bowl. And I think any conference would be thrilled with that. And we certainly are.
Commissioner, Mark and I opened this show today talking about a lot of history of ACC football. And certainly you got institutions here that have crossed a unique dynamic. Clemson, obviously one of the founding members of the league, as is North Carolina. Notre Dame in a unique circumstance caused by a worldwide pandemic is a football member this year. Three teams in the New Year's Six, two of the four in the playoff. What does it say about the kind of the strength and the infrastructure of ACC football?
Wes, I think it emphasizes the upward trajectory that Atlantic Coast Conference football has been on and continues to be on. And that's something going back years that we have talked a lot about within the league. It was a big part of our expansion discussions of how to improve our football and add more depth and be more competitive from a national standpoint, while not diminishing our tremendous history and tradition in basketball. And I think today shows that we have been able to do that, and that's a tremendous credit to our schools and our coaches, our athletic directors, and their leadership.
Commissioner, if I put you on truth serum, and I mean this in all sincerity now, did you ever think that any league, much less the ACC, could get two teams in the college football playoff when you guys were constructing this idea?
I thought that could happen. I thought it would be few and far between. I thought it would, the circumstances would have to fold out the right kind of way. And I think that's proving to be true. I mean, there are only two conferences that have had two teams in so far. I'd say it's probably happening with a little more frequency than I would have expected in these first few years of the playoff. I'm just pleased that we're one of those conferences, and tremendously pleased that, you know, with Clemson and Florida State, and what they were doing and are doing, that we've had a team in the playoff every year. Because I'm sure it's tough when you're a commissioner and sitting on the outside looking in, not just for the commissioners, but for the, you know, the membership schools. And we've been fortunate to have a team in the playoff every year, and now to reach a point where there are two. And a few years ago, if you recall, we had some possibilities for two different years of having two in. Didn't work out when it was all said and done. But, you know, again, tremendously pleased for today and what it says about ACC football.
And I will tell you this too, Commissioner Swofford, that, you know, in my chair doing a radio show every day, and now obviously doing this thing on television on ACC Network, when the college football playoff was unveiled, the narrative, you know, we hear about the narrative all the time. The narrative was, oh, poor ACC. You know, they're going to be the first of the Power Five leagues to be left to the curb, right? They got no shot at getting anybody in. Yeah, maybe Florida State will sneak in or whatever. And you mentioned every year we've had this is year seven of the playoff. The Atlantic Coast Conference has had at least one team in there every single year. ACC and the SEC are tied with 8 teams getting into the dance. It is amazing how this thing has come kind of full circle to you again being a co-architect of getting this concept, and here we are in the ACC having such incredible success in the tournament itself. It's amazing. So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you. And I think what the playoff has done is give us an opportunity to earn it by our play, by how our teams have played during the course of the year, and then the success that our champion in previous years has had in the first 6 years in the playoff, because it's, you know, sometimes the toughest way to change a narrative is when you don't have tangible competitiveness on the field.
Right.
And we have had that, and much to the credit, again, of our coaches and ADs, we've earned it on the field. And that's what really college football and college athletics is all about.
Commissioner, I've heard several conversations with your colleagues from other conferences in the Power 5 level and really kind of other conferences as a whole in FBS here. But in particular, you know, Commissioner Sankey, Bob Bowlesby, Kevin Warren, you know, those type conversations, Larry Scott on occasion. What do you think we will take from this 2020, and it will be something that 'll be almost an automatic for us going forward? What have we learned this year that can help us going forward? Not the difficult hurdles and obstacles, but what do you think is useful to us going forward that we've learned this year?
Well, I think we've learned that we have to and need to be flexible, that there needs to be outside of the box thinking, that maybe scheduling a decade out isn't the best idea in the world necessarily. Mm-hmm. You know, I've said before, in a general sense, I think that what we've learned is to get through the pandemic, you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, and you have to have flexibility. Mm-hmm. And our players and coaches, teams have had to have tremendous discipline to play as many games as we've been able to play in the league this year. I think we'll probably learn some things about scheduling within the conference, and there'll be, as there have been for years, ongoing discussions about you know, whether we maintain the two divisions, whether we play 8 or 9 or even 10 conference games, or whether there are no divisions. So not to totally resurrect that conversation, but it's an opportunity to experience some things in real time and understand how it feels and how it works that before we were just guessing.
What would it mean to you personally, for argument's sake, if Notre Dame and Clemson win today and it's an all ACC national championship in football? But for you personally, I know what it would mean for the league, but for you personally.
Well, I mean, from that standpoint, it couldn't get any better than that. But I'm going to follow that up with a coach's answer. You play them one game at a time. You know, we could have 2, we could have 1, we could have none. You know, again, you have to put yourself in the place of opportunity before you can reach that point. And we have done that today. Notre Dame and Clemson have done that today. And, you know, then you play the games and you hope for the best and put everything you have into it. And that would be the culmination of, you know, a lot of things over the past 2 decades, without question. But with or without that, Mark, it's just a tremendous time for ACC football. So pleased to see the league where it is at this given point in time.
Well, you get all the credit in the world for that, because you've had the vision that football is going to have to be important in a basketball-dominated conference. But I got to tell you, Commissioner Swofford, and I know that you can see the finish line, right? And I know you're thinking about the grandkids and playing golf and long walks with Nora and everything's good. But I couldn't imagine going out any higher if it turned out that we had an all-ACC national championship in football. I can't even imagine – a better way to cross the finish line under a scenario like that?
I agree. let's hope that happens.
So much for the coach speak.
I raise a toast to you should that happen.
I'll tell you what. I've already got the bubbly here from the 2018 Clemson National Championship. They'll have to send another pallet if that happens. I'm telling you right now.
I was going to say, that looks empty.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's not empty. Okay. I got news for you. It's still early in the day.
Well,
there you go.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you a question, and Mark and I were talking historical when we first started this show today, and you no doubt qualify to speak to this because not only of your commissionership but also your term as a student athlete and athletic director in this league. We got a picture on the set that I showed earlier. It's the ACC coaches around the late 1960s, early 1970s. It's got Frank Howard and Bill Tate and Bill Dooley and George Blackburn. And here's the picture. That's the picture we've got. And you'll not be surprised at all to find out that picture came from my dad's office. But anyway,
right.
The idea that those guys were the forlorn of what we have today, what do you think guys like your college coach, Bill Dooley, Frank Howard, what would they like about ACC football today?
The winning to being in the national picture and being there since the college football playoff started and a year or so before that on a consistent basis, and the respect to ACC football that spring that has brought. And several of them would say, I told you we could do this.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm gonna switch gears on you again, all right? Because again, I know you can see the sunset coming, all right. And I don't mean to push you out the door because we have so much respect for you, but we always have a good time with you, Commissioner. Tomorrow, when North Carolina is playing in the Orange Bowl for the first time ever, now forget about being the commissioner. I want you to now pretend you're in retirement, all right? You got your feet up, you're a proud North Carolina alum, played there, blood, sweat, and tears at Keenan. What does that mean? Right. What does that mean for every North Carolina fan, former player, alum, that the fact that North Carolina is playing in a major bowl game tomorrow night?
Well, it means a lot. There's no question about that. I'll be candid with you. When I was the AD at North Carolina, that's one of the things I really, you know, privately wanted to see and hoped that we could reach. Mm-hmm. And we didn't quite get there. And we had some really, really good teams, but we didn't quite reach that point. And so I think Carolina fans are tremendously looking forward to tomorrow. It sets another standard program-wise with any program that gets to a bowl game as prestigious as the Orange. One of the things I felt when we were transitioning from the BCS to the CFP was that we had to get the Orange Bowl done. We had to get a deal done with the Orange Bowl that not only gave our champion an opportunity to be there, but also gave, if that champion or a second team, as is the case this year, was in the playoff, then a third team goes to the Orange Bowl. I felt like that was critical to what we were trying to do for Atlantic Coast Conference football because of the prestige that goes with an Orange Bowl invitation. And it's a measuring stick without question. And I'm just really pleased for that program, for that university, and for Mac. You know, he deserves that, and I hope he'll keep that trajectory, as I spoke about earlier, league-wise, keep that program's trajectory on an upward trend, and I'm sure that he will. So it's a big deal. Simply put, it's a big deal in a lot of ways. And when you have to go all the way back to a gentleman who I had the privilege of knowing and who was one of the nicest, most wonderful people I've ever known, You have to go all the way back to Choo Choo Justice when Carolina played in that level of bowl game. So tremendous thing for that program, tremendous thing for our league.
Yeah, cool story, no question.
Yeah. Commissioner, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for your time. Enjoy the day. Happy New Year to you and Nora and your family, and we wish you the best. Look forward to catching up with you here.
Wes, Mark, Happy New Year to both of you. It's always a pleasure to be with you. Let's hope it's a happy day.
You got it. It already is, Commissioner. Already is.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. It's the New Year's Day edition. We're getting ready for, obviously, the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl. NC State going to do the little Gator Bowl thing. That's going to be cool. We got the Heels and the Orange Bowl tomorrow.
Yep.
We got hoops this weekend. It's a good time, man. It's a good time to be alive, Wes Durham in 21. We're glad to be here.
Notre Dame, Alabama. Yep, Notre Dame, Alabama at 4 o'clock. Jen Latta, by the way, with Brian Kelly and Ian Book. The Irish are big underdogs going into the ball game this afternoon. But Coach Kelly and Ian Book say they're confident in their approach against the Crimson Tide.
What has been different about the offense this year with Tommy Reese as offensive coordinator?
I think there's an aggressiveness to it. You know, as an ex-quarterback, I think he recognizes the flows of games and really wants to be aggressive when he knows that not only that he needs to, but maybe when you don't think he needs to be. So they're always thinking outside the box, which is good. And that's why, you know, one of the things that is attractive in the hiring process, you're always looking for somebody that is bringing fresh ideas, innovation, looking to, you know, take the things that I've done for many, many years and tweak it and bring some different thoughts into the room.
Where does your offense have the advantage over Alabama?
I would say our physicality is kind of been our identity this whole entire year. We want to go out there and play smash mouth football. We want to go out there and be physical for, you know, 60 minutes is what we say. 60 minutes, just give everything you got. And we have guys that are just really tough, love to hit, love to play football, and just play for each other and play at 110%. And I think that's our identity.
When you talk about Ian Book and you talk about Williams, what do they bring to their individual positions?
Well, they're playmakers, but they've got to be playmakers when it matters the most, and they're going to have to do that against Alabama. They have to step up their game, and we've got to put them in a position to do so as well. As coaches, as players, we've got to coach better and put them in a position where they can make plays for us, and then when they get their number called, they've got to make plays as well.
When you have a well-rounded, balanced offense like Alabama, from a defensive perspective, how do you attack that?
Well, you can't stop everything, but you have to minimize the big plays, the quick scores. It's like anything else. This is not rocket science. They have to earn everything, go all the way down the field, make them execute over a longer period of time. It's got to be 8 to 10 plays. And because if you can, you know, obviously get them in a situation where they've got to execute more plays, there's a chance they can make a mistake.
What would a win against Alabama prove to those who question Notre Dame's legitimacy on the big stage?
Yeah, we definitely hear that a lot. And, you know, we hear that noise. And I think it's just a chip on our shoulder. It's motivating. And to have an opportunity to play the number one team in the country again, and to beat a number one team again would be huge for us. Just be confidence building, and it would lead us in the right direction towards our main goal of winning a national championship.
You know the narrative that surrounds Notre Dame in some of its biggest games on the biggest stages. What would a win over Alabama do to silence those critics?
Well, I don't know what those critics are, really. We've been in the national playoffs 2 out of the last 3 years. Everybody picks at what they want to pick at. We're just going to keep building, you know, keep winning football games, keep getting opportunities. That's the most important thing. You know, as long as you keep getting opportunities, put yourself in these games. That's the best you can do. But we'll play up to our capabilities against Alabama, and they get a second chance to do that.
It's go time at the Rose Bowl. No question about it. You know, it's interesting, Wes,
yep.
The four teams that we have in the college football playoff, right? Bama, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State. Since the year 2018, really the last 3 years of college football, 2018, 2019, 2020, the four winningest teams in order. Clemson 1, Bama 2, Ohio State 3, Notre Dame 4. The four winningest teams right. in college football. Winning right here. And they're the four in the big dance. Yep. So, you know, I think one of the things that's gotten lost, too, with Notre Dame, everybody's talked about hey, you're 0-for and all this and the BCS and the college football playoff. You know, Brian Kelly did something this year. It's never happened in the history of Notre Dame football. And that is, for the fourth consecutive year, they won 10 or more games. I can't emphasize how hard that is to do, whether you're talking about Notre Dame, Division II, Division III, whatever. It's hard to win and stay there when everybody's right. giving you the best shot, right? And every time Notre Dame takes the field, whether they're having a great year or, you know, whether they're struggling, they get everybody's best shot. That's just who they are. So the fact that the Irish in the last 4 years have gone 10-plus wins in each of the last 4 years for the first time ever, yeah, you want to win today. There's no doubt. It's important. I mean, I know Coach was talking about we have nothing to prove. Yeah, you always have something to prove when you put the cleats and the helmets on and go out and play. But Notre Dame's consistency here the last 4 years under Brian Kelly can't be underestimated or not appreciated, because that mm-hmm. is hard to do. And as all their tradition and all their history, that's never been done before. So congrats to Brian Kelly and this group of seniors. We keep emphasizing the senior leadership in their locker room. Believe me, those guys for the last 2 weeks have heard everybody throw dirt on the grave. That's why I want to see what happens mm-hmm. in the first 15 minutes of this game, if Notre Dame can kind of dictate how this game's going to be played.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Mark, it's interesting. The last couple of days in and around kind of this holiday week, if you will, between Christmas and New Year, I don't know that you've recognized this. I don't know if you've seen it. I just happened to be traveling and working on games. So the last day or two, I've noticed that on ESPNU, they've been replaying the CFB 150, the College Football 150 docuseries that ESPN did. And it's just a fantastic piece. And then there's the one, and I know you know the one I'm talking about, the one about Notre Dame, right? That half-hour piece that they did on Notre Dame. And it got me to thinking that for all the things about Rockne and Leahy and all the unbelievable history and tradition of that institution, they've not been as good in the modern era as they are right now. What you just mentioned, they've not been as good as they are right now. But what they don't have right now is what those other coaches and those other eras of Notre Dame football have.
Right.
That's a national championship.
That's right.
It's the only thing missing.
You're 100% right, and it's one of the reasons I said that this game this afternoon is the most important game in Notre Dame modern football. And, you know, you've heard all the stats, right? Two wins against, you know, top 10 teams and yep. all this stuff, and 0-for this and 0-for that, and they haven't done this and haven't done that, and people making stupid comparisons to the 2012 game, which has zero to do with what we're going to see. It doesn't mean Bama couldn't boat race them. Doesn't mean Notre Dame couldn't boat race Alabama. 2012's got nothing to do with what we're getting ready to see this afternoon. But right. there is a missing piece of the equation with Notre Dame. And we can give you, you know, four straight years of 10-plus. Today's game is the missing piece. At some point in time, to get to the conversation yep. when it just says, hey, let's talk about Bama or Clemson or Ohio State, you got to win this kind of game, right? And I don't want to hear about what you did in 1947. That doesn't mean squat to me in 2020 or 2021. These are the moments, right? You got to close the deal
yep.
in these kind of games. And even if Notre Dame doesn't win, it needs to be a fourth quarter. Hey, we are in the game. A break here or there, that's our game. I don't think if we come back here on Monday and we're talking about, man, a lot, 47-7, you know, one of those routines, or like the Florida right. game the other night, you got beat 55-20. That narrative is going to continue whether Notre Dame likes it or not. You've got to grab the moment.
That's it.
And perform. And so I think there's a lot of pressure on the Irish. I know Bama's number one, but Notre Dame needs to respond this afternoon.
Wouldn't you say eerily similar to where Clemson was the first time they took the step in the CFP? eerily similar.
Clemson went through the same issue with Clemsoning, right? Oh, my goodness. They'll give you a weekend where you go, wow, man, the Tigers looked great. And then they just drop a – just lay an egg, and you go, who are these guys? And you heard the term Clemsoning. The only way that narrative changed is when Clemson started looking at the top 10 teams and went, scoreboard, scoreboard, scoreboard. And now, all of a sudden, Clemsoning means, hey, they won another one. And Dabo and the boys got a chance to win their third in 5 years. It's the only way you change a narrative is to win and win at this level. So tag your it, Notre Dame, and everybody's going to be watching.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham, happy new year to everyone. Yes, we are still streaming live on the ESPN app. Yes, you can get us on SiriusXM 371. And yes, we're going back to New Orleans because Andrea Adelson made it through the evening on a New Year's Eve in the Big Easy. And she is ready to roll as we get ready for the Tigers and the Buckeyes again. Andrea, happy new year. How are you?
Happy New Year, guys. I hope you can't see the bags under my eyes. The fireworks were epic last night in New Orleans, and they were going well past midnight.
I will say one thing. Having spent some time in the great state of Louisiana in my younger days, the good folks of Louisiana know how to have a good time. They don't need a reason to have a party. Pandemic, no pandemic. Hurricane, no hurricane. Those folks just know how to live. And so it's no surprise that it was a festive evening last night in the big town. But I hope we have ourselves a football game tonight because there's been a lot of talking. And again, we have now seen these guys. It's turning into truly one of the best new rivalries in college football between the Tigers and the Buckeyes.
No doubt about it, Pack. And I was with you guys in Arizona last year for the semifinal. And I remember thinking at halftime, Ohio State should be boat racing these guys because of how much they had dominated offensively. But of course, they couldn't convert in the red zone. Three times in the red zone, they had to settle for field goals. That was one of the biggest differences in the game. And obviously, so was Trevor Lawrence and the way he was able to run the ball. I think that took Ohio State by surprise at career-high 107 yards rushing. And when he went down the field for that touchdown at the end of the first half, I think all of us just looked at each other. What just happened? Was that Trevor Lawrence? Was that Lamar Jackson? Who was that out there? So great game, great ending, and maybe we'll get another one tonight.
You know, Andrea, the Ohio State-Clemson game, but I keep coming back to the fact that the Tigers and the building you're standing in have not exactly gelled. Last year, LSU for the national title. A couple of years ago, it was Alabama in a CFP semifinal at the Sugar Bowl. I'm curious to kind of see how Clemson handles exercising the demons of the Louisiana Superdome tonight.
Same here. And I was at both of those games, the Alabama loss and the loss last year. And I'll never forget the scene in both locker rooms. After the Alabama loss, we weren't sure whether Christian Wilkins and those defensive linemen were going to come back. The utter dejection in that locker room. I remember Christian was crying, and nobody really knew how to deal with it, how to handle it. They came back, and they won a national championship. Last year, similar situation. Trevor alone in his locker with his head in his hands. He had gone to all of his teammates before the locker room was open to us in the media and told them, don't worry, we'll be back. And now here they are, ready to have a far better performance in this building. I think the one thread in both of those games, the offense just couldn't do anything in either one of those games. And it was hard to watch because when we watch Clemson, we're so used to scoring. We're so used to them being able to essentially control what they want to do. They were unable to do that in both of those games. I am expecting a far different performance from this offense. And I think Travis Etienne in his last game in this building back home has something to play for, extra motivation. And the same thing for Trevor after what happened to him in his only loss as a starter in this game last year. this is a moment I think he's been waiting on since that loss to LSU.
You know, and it's so funny, isn't it? I mean, we've heard about Ohio State, you know, we want them, we want them, we want them. They got Clemson plastered all over their building. I mean, really, I said to you yesterday, Clemson's been living rent-free in Ohio for seemingly forever since Dabo got there. But the same thing holds true for Clemson. You know, they didn't like that experience in that building with a loss for the national championship. And they've been circling the calendar going, hey, one of these days we're going to be back in the same place for a chance to go get what we want to play. So it's really both teams have kind of gone full circle. And ironically, they see each other again. And, you know, I mentioned the fact that this is kind of a cool, young, hip rivalry. My buddy Eddie George, one of the all-time great Buckeyes, told me, though, the other day when I asked him that question, Andrew, he said, Pack, it's not a rivalry. I said, well, Eddie, how can you say that? He said, Pack, we've never beaten the Tigers. You know, it's not a rivalry until both sides win. So I think that's one of the things that's kind of fueling Ohio State with their incredible, proud tradition, their fan base, and everything else that – Clemson really has been their kryptonite in every sense of the word. It's not Michigan, it's Clemson.
And in order to get back to a national championship, they have to get back past Clemson. That's the bottom line. That's the way it has been now for, what, the last 6 years? And I think that's what bothers them the most. Right? They're Ohio State. They're the blue blood. They're the guys who have won the championships and have the history and the tradition. And I don't know that they can deal with the fact that you've got this team with Dabo and everything they've accomplished over the last decade. They can't figure out how to beat them. And they have been close. I was at that Orange Bowl game when they beat Urban, and that was essentially the turning point for this Clemson program. And ever since then, they haven't been able to do it. So I do think there is much more on the Ohio State side in terms of bitterness and anger and resentment because they haven't been able to quite figure out the Clemson puzzle. And as one of the Clemson players, I think it was Amari Rodgers, said, this isn't a rivalry for us. This isn't like South Carolina. This is just another game. And I think it's because they know they've never lost to Ohio State. Their motivation doesn't have anything to do with Ohio State. It has everything to do with what happened in this building a year ago and trying to win another national championship.
Andrea, last time we were all in that building, and I do mean all of us, we were all there last year for LSU and Clemson. That city was, well, in part because of LSU, but also because it was LSU and Clemson and two high-flying football teams. I get the sense, though, the Saints have only had crowds allowed in that building for four games and will have also a reduced capacity for the playoffs, as I understand it. I don't think any extension's been given to the bowl game, correct? They're having to deal with the same regulations that the NFL's had to deal with in the facility. So what's the environment in the building going to be like? What's the environment in the city like? I've got to believe it's different.
Totally different. They're expecting about 3,000 fans in this game. And I was having flashbacks to January, sitting up in the press box with a full stadium. The president was here for the national anthem. It was electric. You had goosebumps because it was such an amazing, awesome sight to see this crowd and this stadium completely filled up. Just the energy, the anticipation, the excitement. And since I've arrived here in New Orleans and I've walked around the city a little bit, it feels like a ghost town. Last time, you had Clemson fans and LSU fans. Everyone's got their colors on, all their fan gear on. And this time around, there hasn't been any of that. The only place I've seen a lot of people was this morning. It was, I'm sure you guys can guess, Café Du Monde, lying down the street, as expected. Otherwise, though, it has been completely empty around here. And it makes you sad knowing that so many other things are happening around us, that we're in the middle of a pandemic. There is some perspective here in knowing how difficult and challenging it was to even get to this point, to even have a football season. It's just another part of what everyone is dealing with. And I asked Clemson this week, well, what has your bowl experience been like? This is not a normal bowl experience for either team. Clemson arrived a couple of days early. They rented out a movie theater. And they watched a movie, and then today it's just similar to any type of preparation that they would have. Same thing for yesterday, quick walkthrough in the stadium, but no bowl events at all. So it has been different. Mm. It has been unique. But the fact that we're all here, I think, is a victory in itself.
Andrea, we know that the Tony Elliott story, which we discussed yesterday, and we know Clemson from a COVID perspective, I think there's a walk-on player and a scholarship player that did not make the trip. From Ohio State's perspective, has there any information in terms of, hey, you expect Olave to play and so forth? But, you know, they've had so many guys out in their crazy six-game season. Is there any update from Ohio State in terms of full strength? How many guys are out? What we can at least expect later tonight?
Chris Olave did travel, so he will be available. The question is, will he be at his peak? Will he be able to do the things we've all expected him to do? The problem, as you all know, with the protocols is you don't just return to practice immediately when your 10 days are up. There are tests that have to be passed, and then it is a slow return to practice. You're not full go the first second you're back on the practice field. And so they have taken things slowly with all of the players who have been out. Ryan Day has been very cagey about whether he's going to have his team at 100% full peak performance because it's a floating target, as he says. So many guys, depending on when they came off of their isolation or their quarantine, how their protocols have gone in terms of trying to ease them back into practice. The bottom line is we won't know until kickoff how these players are going to look. I don't even think Ohio State knows, quite honestly, because they haven't really had their full team together in probably over a month.
Crazy.
Wow. You said something a moment ago, and you're the perfect perspective for this because you've been with us on and off throughout the entire year. I don't think any of the three of us here thought we hoped we'd get to this point, right? We weren't real sure in August we were going to get to this point. We just had John Swofford on, Andrea, at the top of the hour. There's no doubt he's proud not only to have two teams in the Final Four. I think he's proud of the college football process this year. Hadn't been easy. We all know that. But they did find a path to the end. It was probably a little crooked, maybe more crooked than folks wanted at the end. But we've gotten to a point where we feel like we can crown a national champion at some point.
Guys, I'll never forget, I picked the first week in August to go visit family. We drove to Michigan because we didn't want to get on an airplane. And my phone starts blowing up that the season's probably going to be canceled. And I was outside in the dark in my mother-in-law's driveway making calls to folks in the ACC trying to get a gauge on what was going to happen. They didn't even know what was going to happen. It was that precarious in terms of whether the ACC was going to go with the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and decide that they were going to not play in the fall or at least to put a temporary break on it, or whether they were going to proceed forward. And when the ACC made that decision to proceed forward, I think a lot of people have talked about Trevor Lawrence's role in that, some of the other Clemson players' role in that. Speaking out, the "we want to play" movement, knowing that the players wanted to play, I think helped make that decision for the ACC. And now here we are with Clemson and Trevor Lawrence getting ready to play in a national championship. And he had COVID and he missed a couple of games. And yet he never wavered in wanting to play. So I think that just speaks to the player perspective for the players that we have seen take the field this year. They wanted to play. They wanted to do this. And you're right. It hasn't been perfect. You can sit here and try and point out criticisms. Everyone's going to do that. But again, the bottom line is we're in line today for two semifinal games. And then we'll be in line for a national championship on January 11th. And I got to tell you guys, at the end of July, I really did not think it was going to happen.
Yep. And I think that includes almost all of us, if you're going to be completely transparent. This, I think May, June, and July, we're all like, man, this is going to be a crazy, bumpy, wild ride. And if we can get to the finish, embrace it. So we will embrace these two national semis today. But to Andrea, listen, always appreciate the time and the great reporting and insight. And have fun tonight.
Thanks, guys. Happy New Year.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. Oh, yeah. Oh. Nothing like getting on the bus, boys. Let's go play us a little football game. Yes, sir. Rose Bowl up first. Sugar Bowl tonight. Notre Dame-Bama, round one. Clemson and Ohio State tonight. We're getting a little bit closer. Can't wait for kids.
You know what?
It's going to be great.
You know, the only thing we're missing here is like a live toss to somebody to interview a coach off a bus. That would just complete the Packer and Durham triumvirate for 2020, wouldn't it?
I'd like that. Get a little bus driver action.
Yeah, be good.
Yeah. We got the huddle coming up here at the top of the hour. The boys are going to take you right into kickoff, man. It's going to be good.
That's exactly right. The Rose Bowl is being played outside Pasadena for the first time since New Year's Day 1942, when it was moved from Pasadena to Wallace Wade Stadium.
Outdoor.
In Durham. Mm-hmm. Because of the attack on Pearl Harbor a month earlier. So what did we decide to do? Well, we went and got a little perspective on the parallels between this year's Rose Bowl and that one from the eyes of Joseph Colley, a 95-year-old World War II veteran who attended the game in Durham almost 80 years ago. Here is native North Carolinian Ryan McGee.
The Rose Bowl is as much about where it is as what it is. The granddaddy of them all, played on the perfect grass turf, in the perfect stadium, against the perfect backdrop of the San Gabriel Mountains. But this year, the Rose Bowl won't be played in Pasadena. Just chalk it up to yet another unprecedented, once-in-a-lifetime event forced upon us by a global crisis, right? Wrong. This game has been moved before, nearly 80 years ago. But don't take my word for it. Let's hear from someone who was there that day.
My name is Joseph Colley, born in 1925, from all over North Carolina, born in Concord, and then I was here in Durham for 3 years. I did go to the Rose Bowl, which was here in January 1st, 42.
That's right. Less than 1 month after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, the 28th Rose Bowl, featuring Oregon State and second-ranked Duke, was moved to a facility that had been modeled after the Rose Bowl, Duke Stadium in Durham, North Carolina.
We know the Japanese had submarines off the West Coast. Wallace Wade, the coach here, offered to have it placed in Durham, and that's why I came to Durham. I just remember it was really packed. You know, I'd never been to anything that large.
There were so many people that Duke had to borrow bleachers from rivals North Carolina and NC State. It was the biggest stage Duke football would ever be on. But it didn't end the way the Blue Devils won.
I think Duke was favored. Unfortunately, the score was 20-16. I just remember it being a great game, something I would never forget.
I just got to tell you, there's still a part of me that wishes that the Rose Bowl is at Wallace Wade Outdoor this year. That would have been incredibly cool, right? You know, that the only two times we're not playing in Pasadena, we're going to Durham, North Carolina, to Wallace Wade Outdoor Stadium to have the Rose Bowl. But that old black and white footage, man, that is some cool stuff, I got to tell you. But like I told you, nothing defines 2020 more than the fact that the Rose Bowl is going to be in Dallas, and it involves ACC's very own Notre Dame, right? I mean, the Irish are in the Rose Bowl for the first time since 1925, and, you know, Alabama hasn't been there since, when I wrote it down earlier, 1946 or something like that. 1946, I think it is. But, you know, it's just, it is what it is. Like you said, man, if you had asked anybody in the middle of the summer, hey, are you good? If we're going to do this, you'd have signed up in a millisecond. And it's just been amazing that we've had so many games. So many people get a lot of credit, in addition to obviously the student-athletes who performed and have entertained us. But the medical folks, the great leadership of the commissioners across the board, the ADs, the coaches, the players, medical staffs, like I said, man, and just a truly remarkable, incredible job for us to get to the college football playoff today.
You know, I'm not sure whether your membership in the ACC is 8 years or if it's 80 years. You got to be able to grasp a little bit of the history that's going on today and understand that when the the league got into the football business in the 1950s, they were coming off a national championship for a member institution, right, Pac? I mean, Maryland had just won a national championship the year the ACC was founded. It was hopeful and optimistic that one day the Atlantic Coast Conference would be kind of that forebearer of football. And some will say it's long overdue. But today, with Clemson and Notre Dame, and yeah, we understand Notre Dame's in a one-year situation and could very well be an independent by the end of next week again. But who knows what the scenario is, and it doesn't take away from the fact that it's happened this year. It also speaks to that two other teams are going to play tomorrow, and NC State and North Carolina are teams who are also trying to get to that level. Clemson's been there. They won two national championships under Dabo Swinney. Notre Dame's trying to cross a bridge to join a group of elite teams as a member of the ACC today against Alabama. Carolina and NC State are trying to push. Tar Heels making a track that's older than the league, 70 years, right? NC State's trying to take a rebound season and punctuate it with a win. Those four schools alone just kind of pirouette where we want to go in 2021 with ACC football. I thought about that early this morning, and now it kind of presents itself because here's Clemson, you already know. Notre Dame, great tradition, trying to go that one last step. Carolina now there for the first time. And the rebound effect of NC State off a bad year to a good year, trying to end on a positive to go to the next year like so many other teams in this league are.
Yeah, and then you throw in teams like Miami and Florida State who have seen the top of the mountain, right?
Yep.
And, again, the Canes, I know, disappointed the way the season ended. Florida State, work in progress. You throw that into the mix. I mentioned that, 30 years ago today, Georgia Tech knocks off Nebraska to win a co-championship of a national perspective. And, you know, so there's so many storylines across the board. Right now, Clemson is the standard when it comes to ACC football. But I think there's some teams that are sitting there going, hey, guess what? We are heading in the right direction. And that's why it will be important for North Carolina to play well tomorrow in their first major bowl since 1950. And for NC State to go ahead and knock off a team from the Southeastern Conference if they could pull it off and have a 9-win season. So there's still great storylines up and above just the college football playoffs today and tonight.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.